When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us for How She Does It. On this show, we talk about all things women, money, and power. I'm Karen Feinerman. In the past 10 or 20 years, we've fully entered the sharing economy in so many ways. Renting and returning is a new way of life. Think about it. We stay in strangers' homes with Airbnb and VRBO. We borrow books on Kindle. Uber or Zipcars are viable alternatives to owning a car. And we rent a dress for every wedding or event so we never have to be Instagrammed wearing the same thing twice. But what about renting for the smallest members of our family? Fran Mayer, CEO and founder of BabyQuip, has made all of that possible. BabyQuip is exactly what it sounds like. Traveling families can rent high-quality everything, from cribs and toys to car seats for when they're on the go. And as the mom of two sets of twins, I can tell you this is pure genius. If you have kids, you know what an enormous pain in the ass it is to travel. And I think for me, it was fair to say for the first 4 years of my kids' life and 4 years for the second set of twins' life, traveling was absolute hell. It would have made all the difference if I had something like BabyQuip. Fran, welcome to the show. So Fran, I know you've had an extraordinary career as an entrepreneur and with multiple startups, but where did it all start? What were your roots?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for asking, Karen. Happy to be here. I grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico. My dad was in sales, and I've been reflecting on it because he just passed away. And I realized he was such an inspiration. He would give me math problems in the car, tell me how he closed the deal. Really was encouraging. He was quite dismayed when I went into Stanford as an English major, but happy when I think it was junior year, I started a frozen yogurt stand on the Stanford campus.
All right, so Stanford, a very entrepreneurial business school, and it sounds like at the time that you were there, tons of opportunity. What did you do right out of Stanford?
I was really intent on being in marketing. I felt like that was my secret power and building brands. I really believed in a holistic brand that's not just the advertising or the name, but everything having to do with the experience of using the products. I worked at the Clorox company for a number of years in brand management.
So Clorox, I think of as sort of a go-to place, maybe P&G and Clorox, for how to learn how to run a brand. So what were those valuable lessons that you took from there?
So many. I mean, a real focus on how you position the brand in your customer's mind. What is the value proposition? What are the different channels that you can use to reach your customers? And this, of course, is all pre-internet. While I was at Clorox, we were talking about how to reach people with personalization. But pre-internet, there wasn't a whole lot you could do.
So that was mailings, or what were you doing?
Yeah, some experimentation with direct mail. And then I went on to AAA, which is very much about direct mail membership economy. And that was actually a very good experience that when I joined my first startup, it was both the Clorox experience and the AAA experience made a big difference.
And so that subscription, that's sort of verging on maybe getting to a more what we think of modern kind of business and marketing. Did you feel like something was changing?
Yeah, I think that if you look at the early 90s, we were seeing a progression. And at AAA, I really understood the value of membership and subscriptions. And the value is not being just in terms of getting the recurring revenue from the business standpoint, but actually creating a connection and a community with your users. And one of the things that I did at Match.com, which was my first startup, is I advocated for our membership business model when the proposal on the table was to charge per connection. But at Match, we really tried to position ourselves to women. And I didn't think charging per connection was something that women would like. And that was the proposal, to charge per connection. And we had the explicit strategy to target women with the idea that if we could get women, the men would follow, which made a lot of sense because women were really the scarce resource, still are on most of the dating sites. And so we really focused on making it attractive to women, not just in terms of how we advertise, but how we built the product. And a membership business model was one of those innovations.
Okay, so this is really the dawn of this kind of business. And prior to that, it had been sort of, I don't know, classified ads, but in the sort of dating space, which a lot of people were hesitant to do.
They were sleazy.
Right. Okay, let's call it exactly what it was. So how did you sort of get the idea of, okay, you said having women on it in a subscription was really important, but what was sort of the early formation of how do we make this work and how do we make this something that people feel comfortable with?
Yeah, so 900 numbers in classified ads was the prevailing business model for newspapers. And honestly, newspapers would put horrible ads up, like I'm into a gangbang, to generate 900 number revenues. So you can understand, and sure, there were more upscale personals in like nice magazines, but really we're talking pretty sleazy. Now here you have the internet, which really you can ask more questions, you can put longer profiles, you could do a whole lot better with the matching, both ways, right? Not just I read it and I like it, but that they would like me too. So that was just a fundamental big change. We knew we didn't want to be like 900 personals. We really wanted people to actually find love and better dating. And as I mentioned, the first strategy was targeting women. And that involved not just marketing, but the way the site looked, the kinds of questions that we asked. One of the things that I talk about is the engineer comes into my office. Well, what are we matching in terms of weight? What should be the pound breakdowns? I said, no. We are marketing to women. Women do not want to put their weight down. And so we're going to have body type. And, you know, to this day, dating sites don't ask you about your weight. Of course, now we have photos. Back then, a lot of our initial questions were about how you looked, right? But early on, we saw that people wanted questions that related to longer-term relationships. You know, we start out with five questions, six questions, a lot of them having to do with appearance. But the questions that we added in the next iteration were about children and religion and what you're looking for in a relationship. So we got the hint from our own customers that they were looking for something much more real.
Right. So this was not a hookup site.
Yeah, not then. And now there's a whole lot of them. And, you know, people can find what they want. But this was the early iterations. And Match was really about finding the match. I mean, we had to get our name out there. And we really focused initially in the Bay Area because, well, we were raising money in the Bay Area and everything was happening. And even though I now live in Santa Fe, San Francisco's one of the most innovative places you'll ever live. You think you're late to the party when it's just at the beginning. In any case, we did that, and thought that we would grow more regionally, but it just exploded. And it reminds me a lot of BabyQuip right now. When, you know, the first years that we would put our suppliers in a new market, we'd get tons of demand right away. So really, there was an unmet need that was pretty significant that we were tapping into.
So that must have been really exciting because you were on the dawn of a new kind of model. And once it gets going, you know, it goes viral. So what did you think about, all right, now what can we do with it?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting because we were hearing from people, and it's the people's stories that are most exciting, that they had given up on dating, and now they're really meeting a lot of people. And then some of the people would say, I don't feel like I need to settle. I'm going to spend more time finding the right person. And Well, we thought initially it was mostly going to be young people. It was people across age ranges. It really wasn't just young people. In fact, one of my favorite stories was a couple, kind of elderly, who wanted to visit us in our San Francisco offices. And I go out and meet them. And like I said, he shared with me, the last time he was in San Francisco was VE Day.
Okay, so that was pre-internet, pre-a lot of things.
I mean, I'm sure they're not around anymore. This was over 25 years ago. But people were definitely hooking up, but they were definitely dating, and they were having a lot of fun, and they were telling their friends about it. And, you know, now, fast forward almost 25 years, meeting somebody at a bar or at a friend's house or whatever is called organic, or dating in the wild.
I get what you're saying, though, about a lot of, you know, I'm going to try a lot more dates. You have a lot of bites at the apple. You got more apples. They were much harder to come by prior to this.
Yeah, before that. So, you know, I'm sure there are some long-term studies about how dating, online dating, has changed relationships. I know we've been accused of making the United States more polarized. So, for example, Republicans don't date Democrats, and Democrats don't date Republicans.
So they get filtered out.
Yeah, you filter that out. Right, right.
Okay, so you're growing this business. Did you need capital, and how'd you get it?
From my recollection, we started out with $1 million of funding, and we got a little bit more funding, and we're still number one. But also, there were some mistakes made. So, for example, I had to show that all the money we spent on advertising and PR and stuff brought in a return. So I was running it cash flow positive. Who does that with a social network?
Nobody.
It's ridiculous, especially early, you know, but we didn't know. And we didn't probably have enough money. But back then, money was kind of cheap. And honestly, if you start a brand in the mid-90s and you did it right, and we cared a lot about brand values, you could have an enduring brand to today.
Okay, so you have this company. It's cash flow positive. It's growing really quickly. And I know something changed. Something happened.
Well, the company, Match.com, was not the company. The company was Electric Classifieds. And the money that was raised was to build a platform to get newspaper classifieds writ large onto our platform. And Match.com was always supposed to be proof of concept. And like we spoke about at the beginning, it was considered a bit sleazy. Plus, at this point in time, the ideas of social networks and online brands and community were not really well understood, certainly not by investors. So our investors were committed to this online advertising for newspapers model, and they couldn't raise enough money. And so they want to sell Match.com and put the money into the Electric Classifieds. And this is before eBay and Craigslist and everybody else. And it didn't succeed. So I protested. I said, we're number one, we're growing, we've got good economics, but the board decided to go a different way. My personal big mistake is I should have raised the $7 or $8 million that they sold it for. And here's where, and I know you're targeting women entrepreneurs, I did not have enough confidence. I did not ask for help. But on the other hand, had I been a guy, I think somebody would have said, why don't you do this and we'll help you? And, you know, looking back on it, I feel like had I had more support within the company, also at home, had I reached out to some friends and said, here's the dilemma, I think I would have gotten the encouragement and would have done it. As it happens, it sold for less than $8 million to send it. A year later, it sold to what is now IAC, or was IAC, for 10 times as much. And I made a couple $100,000 being the good girl, helping these deals happen. But that's not what I deserved.
All right. So, I mean, we've heard so many stories about how difficult it is for women to raise capital, and sort of the idea that you didn't even think about that was a viable option for you to raise money or get the help that you needed to do it. I mean, the idea now of not being able to raise $7 or $8 million to buy a business that's number one, that is cash flow positive, it's astounding. But things change. This isn't the end of your entrepreneurial career, as I well know. All right. I want to get to Baby Quip, but we're going to take a quick break.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places: Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
And we're back with Fran Meyer of Baby Quip and many others. But before we get to that, I want to hear about your next step after Match. I know you went in a different direction to the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, so from Match.com, I went over to Women.com, built up that brand, focused on women. Believe it or not, there weren't that many. From there, I went over to Bluelight.com, which was height of the dot-com boom, big budgets, $100 million. The idea was to get Kmart shoppers online. And then about 2000, the bust started to happen, which was for San Francisco as big as 2008 was for New York. Okay. I mean, it was bad. And at that point, my women.com stock wasn't worth much, and Blue Light exploded in the bad way, not in the good way. And I went over to Trustee, which was an internet privacy company. It's now called TrustDark. They're doing very well. And it was a nonprofit, but this time I was CEO. And I believed in strong, important brands. And Trustee had a lot of customers. And basically, it was certification of privacy policies and review of privacy practices of companies. And about 2005 or six, I realized that we could not compete without having technology. And it was important for us to really take the market opportunity that we had. And so I changed it from nonprofit to for-profit. And Karen, this is what I call my do-over. This time, I got the investors. I got an ownership position. And when we went from nonprofit to for-profit, now we had owners that were investors. I found the investors, Teresa Gao, who at the time was at Excel. Teresa's a Midas Touch venture capitalist, so that was super exciting. And that was hard to do. I had to convince a very risk-averse board of corporate privacy officers that we had to go for profit. And Trustee is not as big of a brand as Match, but nonetheless, I had a do-over. It's important to do that. In 2009, we brought in another CEO. I really wasn't committed to 10 years doing privacy at that point. And privacy is complicated. Privacy is hard. And stayed on for a few more years, left in about 2012, was still on the board, but started to explore some different things. And post-divorce, moved from Alameda to San Francisco, bought a house up the street from Airbnb. And before you know it, I was renting rooms in my house on Airbnb.
Just to see, all right, what's this like? I can make some extra money, but what is this model? How does it work?
How does it work?
You are so ahead of your time, though.
I thought I was behind.
But so many things. I mean, Match.com and then Trustee, the privacy issue, going for the not-for-profit to for-profit. Can I go back for a second? You said you got divorced, and earlier you had mentioned you didn't have enough support at home. So we have a lot of women who are trying to balance a lot of things.
I think the early years at Trustee, my kids were those ages that you want to hang out with them a little bit more. And being a nonprofit executive director, I had a little bit more control, although I did travel quite a bit. I think that I wasn't that young when I got married, but the internet had it happened. And I remember telling my kids, you know, years ago, not that many years ago, you don't understand, the internet happened.
Yeah. I try to remind my kids, no, at college, we didn't have phones. You had a whiteboard on your door with a Velcro sticky and a pen. And if someone came by to see you, they knocked on your door and wrote their name, said, hey, I've stopped by. Unimaginable to them.
Right, right. Things were very different. And when the internet happened, I really went back to being wanting to be an entrepreneur. And once you're an entrepreneur, it's kind of hard to go back. And there was some tension around some of the things that happened tax-wise with all these internet companies. And I mean, people change. And what precipitated, I think, the change for me, where I really had a very different risk profile than my ex-husband, was the internet. I mean, later, post-divorce, my younger son pointed out sometime after the divorce that, well, dad's a Stark and mom's a Lannister. And I was like, what? Wait, I'm nice. You know, he goes, who are your favorite characters? I'm like, oh, okay. You know.
Okay. So I want to get to Baby Quip.
Right. So I'm renting rooms in my house, and then I buy another house in Santa Fe, which is my hometown. And I start to think about what are the, you know, now I'm making money from gig economy. Okay. I mean, who knew? I was consulting some, I was doing some advising, but basically I was making money on gig economy. I was thinking about how is this changing things and how is this new way people are traveling? Vrbo was around for a while. I mean, this was entirely new, but things were changing and change is always the catalyst. And I was advising at Women's Startup Lab and I met a gal who started Baby Airs, a baby gear rental company in Santa Fe. And she gave me her pitch. And I was like, I should be your CEO. And so we formed the company. And she left about a year later. It's kind of hard if you're not a startup person to be a startup person. And then the fun thing is my older son joined as her CTO. So I've been working with my son since 2017.
Which is fantastic. I think that's, I mean, it's a lot about you, a lot about him. That's great.
Well, I can't micromanage him and I can't call him Joey.
Does he call you Fran? How does it work?
He calls me Fran. Yeah.
All right. I know you guys went to pitch on Shark Tank.
Right. Together.
Together. Right. Okay. You're obviously a seasoned, you know, serial entrepreneur by then. So what was it like preparing for that pitch?
So it was really fun. Again, it was so much more fun for me because I did it with my son. Now, my son, his side hustle, he's a jazz performer. So he had pianist, was on a big band in the DC area after college. So he's pretty good. So I had no worries about that. We had to send in video after video of us talking about our story. And Joe really took a lead in a couple of aspects. One was the producer said, you have to bring a pack mule on the stage. So we could say, you need a pack mule to carry all this baby gear. And I was a bit reluctant, but Joe took control of it. You can actually rent a pack mule in Los Angeles. And of course, a trainer and an animal rights person. But the pack mule served to be very good because in the Shark Tank process, you never know if you'll ever get filmed, nor will you know if you get aired. You know, no promises, right?
Oh, that it even gets aired.
That it even gets aired, right. And you could be on the studio, in the studio, and not know if they'll call you to even pitch. But the pack mule had done its business, if you know what I mean. And the producers knew it, and boom, we were in that stage. It's hard for me to remember what was aired versus what I experienced because we were in there for 35, 45 minutes and they cut it down. But we had watched so many Shark Tank episodes that we knew each of the sharks, what they cared about and so on. And sadly, Barbara Cochran wasn't on. I thought she would have really gotten our proposition, but it came down to us and Mr. Wonderful, and he was really interested, but he wanted a good deal, a better deal than I was willing to give. So we didn't get the deal. That's fine.
It turns out you didn't need Mr. Wonderful.
No, no. And then, of course, we don't know if we're going to get aired. And I think they let us know sometime in February of 2020 that we would be airing. And in fact, we aired on March 6, 2020. I had a party at my house. Think about that date.
The last party you probably had at your house.
Yes, exactly. And people were canceling. So we expected the business to go up, up, up. Our whole supplier network was ready to go and the pandemic hit. But, you know, we got through it. I closed some money in early 2019. Then I got another investor who came in March of 2019. So I was very fortunate. Then we got government money, took down some salaries, froze the team, took down marketing. And by early 2021, things were going back up again very rapidly.
So where are you now? How many cities are you in now?
We're at least 1,500. It's kind of hard to keep track.
Wow.
We did 83,000 orders last year. This year, we're trending about 40% ahead of last year. We've got 20 employees and over 2,100 people, mostly moms, who supply the baby gear to the traveling families at their destination.
So this is sort of interesting. You can see Match.com ultimately leading down the road to BabyQuip, but it's a different model. You're now at a more asset heavier model?
No, not really. We don't own the baby gear.
You don't own. Okay.
Yeah, the baby gear is owned by the moms. And while we're sometimes called sharing economy, our quality providers, that's what we call them, they own multiple cribs, car seats, strollers. They're really building a business on our platform. So they might start out with some of the gear that they had from their own babies, but they soon realize that's not sufficient.
And I would imagine once a family has tried this, they're never going back.
Oh, God. You know, the reviews say we saved the vacation. We came to the rescue. Sometimes they call us at the hotel that they thought would have a crib that doesn't really have a crib that's clean, or they have a playpen and they wanted a crib. And so we really do come to the rescue.
Okay, so you got moms basically rescuing moms.
Yeah, and they go above and beyond because they're serving families like their own. And here again, we put a lot of emphasis on trust and safety, knowing that families want to know that the gear is safe and clean and insured. Getting insurance has been a big task, but is also a very big competitive advantage.
Are there competitors?
There's mom and pops, and there's some regional competitors, but no, basically not. But I'll tell you, I learned a good lesson this past year. We're very focused on good unit economics and not paying too much for customers.
In terms of acquisition cost, marketing? Or
lead gen acquisition cost. And so, you know, we look at return on ad spend very carefully. And I realized that in Orlando, we weren't number one.
You weren't number one.
Right, because Orlando, the biggest destination for family travel, has a lot of competitors. And our model of being cheap on the lead gen meant that we weren't always ranked highest on Google search, either on paid or on organic. And so now we're really going to be focusing on Orlando because we need to get in front of all those families. I think over time, that will give us more awareness and we should be number one in the number one destination for families. I think what I'm trying to say is that, you know, you could be the market leader and think that you have everything under control and then you look at one of the most important markets and realize that's not the case.
All right. So you've had this long career now. It seems like you earlier said you weren't confident. How would you rate your confidence now?
Oh, yeah. So much better. Yeah. But still, I make, you know, I advise other founders and still I make some of the same mistakes, you know.
Of course.
I downplay the market size or I don't put together as aggressive forecasts as a guy would do. I mean, sometimes I have to say to myself, what would a guy do just to reset?
I do this show and we'll have guys come on the show and say the market's going to do this or that with a great deal of confidence. And, you know, and I used to think, wow, he doesn't possibly know what the market will do. But he sounds really confident.
That's their superpower, man.
And now, and then I'm like, you know what? That's not so dumb because he might be right. It could work out. We need to do that right. Say it with confidence. I mean, you try to make the best decisions you can. You have a process and of course, you're going to make some wrong, but just having confidence. All right. Well, that's a great transformation. Do you see any change in the financing market for women?
I am so disappointed that despite years of focus on getting women money and funds focused on women and women investing in other women and venture firms and accelerators focused on women, we're still stuck at 2 or 3%. And honestly, Karen, what's the explanation? There's no other explanation other than incredible, incredible bias and lack of money that women have. Although women's purchasing power and women's wealth in the United States is fairly high. So, you know, I also work with how women invest as an investment advisor. We're trying to invest in women-led companies. And it's rough. It's really rough out there. And it's going to take more time than I expected to meaningfully move those numbers. And we need a lot more women really posting big numbers in IPOs and acquisitions and in just general wealth.
I understand. And there is no other explanation. The math doesn't hold up.
Right. I don't think any of us can really think that women only have 3% of the good ideas.
Yes, I like when you put it that way. It is ridiculous. All right. So do you have a longer term plan for BabyQuip that you want to share? Obviously, you want to be number one everywhere you think it makes sense. But beyond that?
Well, I think what we've learned, and we learn a lot from our community of quality providers, is that families want more than baby gear. They want beach gear. They want pet gear. They might want hiking and ski and all kinds of things that maybe they can't get from an REI or some other kind of service. So we're going to be dipping our toe into offering some more of these things. We already do parties for kids, and that's been a big success. So we're looking at doing more. We still do cleaning of baby gear for local families. That was one of our innovations during the pandemic. And, you know, you probably remember how gross those car seats got.
It's amazing what you would find in there.
It's amazing what you would find in there.
We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the lightning round.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
It feels really good to be productive, but a lot of the time it's easier said than done, especially when you need to make time to learn about productivity so you can actually, you know, be productive. But you can start your morning off right and be ready to get stuff done in just a few minutes with the Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day podcast. You'll hear advice on everything from how to build confidence to how to get the best night's sleep. New episodes drop every weekday, and each one is 5 minutes or less, so you only have to listen a little to get a lot more out of your weekdays. Listen and subscribe to Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts. That's Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back with the lightning round. So this is just would you rather. So Fran, all you got to do, only challenge, don't think about it. Just answer first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Hinge or Bumble?
Bumble.
Travel back in time or into the future?
Future.
Thought you would say that. Okay. New Mexico or California?
Ooh, right now, New Mexico.
Okay. Baseball or football?
Baseball.
Travis Kelce or Taylor Swift?
Taylor.
Laugh uncontrollably or be moved?
Laugh.
Okay. Regular crib or $2,000 crib that rocks the baby to sleep?
Regular. But our customers love this new.
Pink or blue or gender neutral colors?
Gender neutral.
The Dropout or We Crashed?
The Dropout.
The timing the market or time in the market?
Timing of the market.
Okay. Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction.
What is something you changed your mind about in the last year?
I have really embraced classical music, which I kind of enjoyed, but now I'm like obsessed. And I don't know why.
Okay, that's a good one. All right, what's the best investment you've ever made? I think you told us what the worst one was. An investment could be any kind of thing.
Oh, it's probably going to be BabyQuip.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I put a fair bit of not just, what do you call it, sweat equity, but some real money into this company.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm going to put in more. The second best would probably be the house in San Francisco I bought.
Okay. All right, Fran, I could talk to you for so much longer than we have, but we don't. Thank you so much for being with us. Where can people find out about, is it babyquip.com?
Yeah, babyquip.com, BabyQuip. And Fran Meyer, Maier, on LinkedIn. And you do know we have a promo code.
Okay. What is it?
Her Money, HERMONEY, $20 off any reservation over $100.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today on How She Does It. When you have a moment, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to updates from the Her Money community at hermoney.com/subscribe. Our producers are Catherine Tuggle and Haley Pascalides, with help from everyone at Her Money. This podcast is mixed and mastered out of CDM Sound Studios. Our music is from Video Helper, and our show comes to you through Megaphone. Have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you here with us again. Onward.